Okay, trustee Green was temporarily delayed, but we're going to move forward. Is there a motion to convene into open session? Trustee Kopisch. Is there a second? Trustee Genrich, roll please. Trustee Kopisch?
Aye.
Trustee Genrich?
Aye.
Trustee Green is absent for the moment. Trustee Van Noven is yes. Trustee Dart?
Yes.
Trustee Gass?
Yes.
Trustee Zeller?
Yes.
Item number 5.
Okay. Yes.
Which refers back to item number 3. Is there a motion with regard to the contents of the closed session regarding the listing of the former Village Hall site property? Yeah. Trustee Gass?
I would move that we table consideration of the issue until the second meeting in November.
Okay.
I'll second.
Trustee Kopisch seconds. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes. Announcements.
Do you want to do the open house?
Sure. just a reminder, the open house for the LA Comprehensive Plan update will be held Tuesday, November 12th at 5 p.m. in this room. So hopefully you can attend, and we invite the public to attend as well.
Any further announcements?
One more. Steve is on the Brown County Planning Commission.
Yes.
And there's he's our representative for that. There's a meeting tomorrow night at 6:30. If there's anybody that could fill in for him, he would greatly appreciate that. And he has his packet with him.
I do have my packet with me. I'm sorry for the late notice. If you could let me know if nobody can make it, I'll have to notify them that we won't be there. It's tomorrow night, starting at 6:30 at the Green Bay Met for transportation building. Any other announcements? correspondence. We have a correspondence request to remove the neighbor approval requirement for hens from keeping an animal ordinance. You want to read that?
We received a letter from Robert Hackle on Hastings. He has 4 chickens at this time. In the original ordinance, we had that approval from the neighbors was required. And in the current ordinance, it states that each year with their license, they would need approval from their neighbors, and he's requesting that be removed.
And that was an oversight and never intended to be there. It was when we did the language cleanup. So we'll have it on the next agenda to clean up the cleanup and get it back to what it was. You have to have initial approval of your neighbors, but after that, you just renew your annual license. What had happened with the original licenses was they didn't need to be renewed, so we didn't know where anybody had them or if they still had them, so that's why the annual licensing came in, but the permission from the neighbors on an annual basis was never meant to be in there. So,
is there an issue if neighbors change?
No, because the chickens are already there. Squatter's rights, for lack of a better term.
Chickens, okay.
Yeah, they're already there. It's the initial... Yeah, although I'd like to point out surrounding communities, some of them are not requiring neighbor notification anymore at all. So, we'd still be one of the few that's requiring that for initially getting them.
Chickens are gaining popularity.
They are. They're quieter than dogs. I mean, as people mm-hmm. point out all the time, they're much less of a disruption to the neighborhood.
So I'm going to read this into the record. To the Village of Alloway Board, in regards to the ordinance to ask neighbors each year after, we did this already, I would like to see this drop as neighbors with dogs do not ask if they can have a dog. Would you please take this into consideration? If the neighbors did not like the chickens, I'm sure you'd be the first, or that you would know about it fast. Thank you, Robert Hackle. 1161 Hastings, dated October 21st, 2013.
Mr. Hackle was also our first resident with chickens, and he's had them the longest, so.
Item 7B, request to prohibit doorknob advertising. Do you want to summarize this before I read? This is dated October 22nd, 2013, from Ellen Zitlow, 146 Dietrich Drive. Village of Ellery board members regarding doorknob advertising. Is there anything you can do to stop front door solicitation? We are out of town frequently and find this to be publicity to anyone who wants to break into the house as left on the door for days. So we also find it to be an invasion of our privacy and trespassing, not to mention how trashy it looks. We have called the 800 number twice to have us removed from the delivery, but that has not worked. Thank you for your consideration, Ellen Zitlow. We also got a correspondence, which didn't make it to the agenda. It's more of a thank you note. It's from the Lorelei. To the Alloway Village Board, on behalf of all of us at the Lorelei Inn, we want to thank you for allowing us to have our 7th annual Oktoberfest in the Lorelei parking lot. The rain on October 5th did nothing to dampen the festivities under the three tents. The event brought in over 1,500 people to the center of Alloway. This I know for a fact, as I had 2,000 wristbands and less than 500 left. It is also a fact that the businesses in the area, the Shell Station, the Pump Room, Las Magallas, and the Century Store also benefited from the event. We heard through the grapevine that the Pump Room had to call in extra help. Everyone benefits at Oktoberfest. The really impressive part of the day was that there was no cover charge for the event. We asked for donations at the door for charity. This year, $1,000 went to the Alloway Kiwanis Leonard Hack Memorial Scholarship Fund, $1,000 to the March of Dimes in memory of Karsten Emmett Arps, and $900 to the Green Bay Animal Rescue to help with their mission of rescuing male puppies and stray animals and finding them loving homes. To us, this was amazing. So thank you so much for allowing us to continue to have our Oktoberfest celebration. There were no incidents with any unruly behavior due to drinking. We did put patrons in cabs when needed. We hired 4 security guards, and they kept a watchful eye. Oktoberfest is set for September 20th, 2014. We hope to have continued success. Last year, the band Big Mouth had us in their top 5 venues to play. You'll be glad to know, per their Facebook page, the Lorelei Inn is now their number 2 favorite venue. Pink Flamingo Baseball Tournament takes number 1 for now. Thank you so much, Dave Hack, Lynn Hackstall, and Megan Staub Colombo. Okay, item 8, a presentation with regard to the Central Brown County Water Authority. Mr. Raklovic. Hey there.
Hi, thank you. It's been a little bit of time since I've been here last, I think. So. A little bit different format this time, a little other news and just talking about the budget. We've been making some decisions and probably ought to communicate those to everybody. And so I thought I'd run through some things from last year and a little bit about what's going to go on next year. Last year, we actually, as most of you know, we've been in litigation for a long time. We actually filed suit in 2008. We finally came to settlement with our engineers on the process, and that was our major case, CPE, AECOM, settle for initial upfront payment and deferred payment sometime out. Also settled with the two primary contractors on our 48-inch steel pipe, and just one piece of litigation outstanding with Michael's Construction. And we have started talking with them, hoping to wrap this up this year and go into 2014 without any active litigation, which will make life a lot better for everybody. Board has decided to take the funds from litigation process and put it into a repair replacement fund for future needs. Let's say we sued because we had some issues and problems, and having the funds available may be very handy one day. All right, good. We are working on a couple of things right now that will carry over till next year. Our initial bonds were sold in 2005. They were at a 5% coupon rate. We still owe about $120 million. And looking at refunding those is a method of reducing our annual budgetary expenses. Bond rates have been not as low as they were a few years ago, but still relatively low compared to the issuance on these. They aren't typically callable for a while, but we're working on that kind of a big project for next year. We will be doing two revisions to the water purchase agreement. All of those will come back to the member communities for voting. The first revision will be a pretty straightforward write-up, simply getting rid of some of the bond covenants that got written into the water purchase agreement so that we can reduce our obligations when we do a refinance. And the second will come later next year and will be major revisions to the agreement, clean up a bunch of things that have arisen during the year. We are submitting probably in the next 3 weeks the Safe Drinking Water Loan Program application for water storage out at the Ledgeview site. Turns out that there are extra funds left with the program, and we'll be able to get our $10 million project funded at less than 2% interest, and they have enough funds that we will get fully funded on the project. So it is a good opportunity to get a project done. I can't say cheaply, but let's say less expensively than it might otherwise be done. It's about 60% of the normal bonding rate is the rate you get from the state.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Could you explain some about SuperNet to market fiber optic system?
Yes. We own a fiber optic system. We're not allowed to run it as a fiber optic system. We have a 65 miles of fiber optic 24-pair line that we use two lines on. And when we built the thing, it was thought maybe we can get some value out of it. Legislation was approved that kept, without getting specific approval, kept us from really becoming a fiber optic network, and that's really not what we are anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We had a firm called SuperNet who works in this area approach us about marketing the system for us, and we've contracted with them to do that on a commission basis. We are hopeful to either lease or sell most or all of the system and recoup some of the investment costs we put into it. We paid about $1.6 million for the system, and it's frankly underutilized. We don't need the whole capacity. And if we can find other users, that would be good for everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
The 2005 bond issue, we have hired Springstead as a financial advisor. Next week, we will be getting proposals from underwriters to work as part of our financing team, and there will be a selection process there. Bonds are callable the end of 2015. We may well do an advance refunding next year to see if it's financially feasible. The one issue for most of our members is that will affect your bank qualification for any borrowing you would do. So you should be aware of that in advance, that we are preparing to refund in probably first or second quarter next year, and any bonds you would sell would be unlikely to be bank eligible at that point in time. So, but again, if we can shave a percent off our bond issue, that's millions and millions of dollars. Our water use history, we started this, actually I go back to 2004 when the water utility first began. We were about 3.2 billion gallons. People have done a really good job of tightening up their water systems. Alloway's been kind of a leader in that effort, and so we're selling less water. We have seen a little bit of an uptick the last couple of years. Last year with the drought, we sold a lot of water. This year we're going to be somewhere around 2.55, 2.6 billion gallons. So a little bit less than anticipated. But we are seeing some return to growth for the communities, which is a good thing to happen. So projections for next year compared to 2013, roughly the same numbers. Just a little bit of change, predominantly in the Pier and Howard. The Pier has done major leak detection work and selling considerably less, losing considerably less water. Budgetary expenses, 2013 was a bit of an aberration. We had in it the relocation of the water line out at FF in 29, and we also had rebates to the member communities associated with accumulated true-up obligations. Those have been taken care of. That was paid for with financing, and the budget this year has returned to more normal kinds of operation numbers. By member, we don't really have your standard dollars per thousand gallons kind of rate. We do calculate that, but basically the allocation is percentage of budget based on your projected flow. First of the following year, we figure out what actually happened and adjust everybody's bills so that everybody paid the same effective rate. Security fund, each community is required to have 2 months' worth of reserves in the security fund, and so those are the adjustments to make that happen for the communities that are slightly under. If we ever get to 3 months' reserves for somebody, then we start rebating funds. The number there for total annual allocation is about a $30,000 increase, so something less than 2% in terms of Alloy's allocation on this. Effective water rate, again, just taking our total budget, dividing by our amount of money we need to get back from rates, about 418. That compares to so rate history has been kind of all over the place, but generally the last 4 years we've been pretty stable. We expect to be pretty stable going forward for the next several years as well. So we don't see a lot of movement coming along during the process. The one major thing that I think I skipped a slide back at the beginning. One of the major things we are looking at is this water storage project out in Ledgeview. It's a $10 million project, roughly. Hoping to get safe drinking water loan program proceeds for it. We probably start work late next year, middle of next year. Wouldn't close on the loan until end of June. That's not really built into the budget, but it would be offset by loan proceeds, so it really wouldn't have a rate impact or cost impact to the community at the time. We're very lucky that we are in line for the funds, that the funds are available. And it appears that even though we haven't got a rating yet, we'll need approval on the loan before the end of the year.
Can you describe the project?
Yes, we're looking at two water storage tanks. One is a roughly 8 million gallon ground storage tank, about 170 feet in diameter and 40 feet tall. The other is a approximately 3 million gallon elevated storage being built in the form of a standpipe. It'll be about 100 feet tall and hold 3 million gallons. Purpose on that is to, right now our entire system runs off of pumps from natural public utilities. When a pump goes off, we get both surge and zero pressure occurrences, which are not a good thing for a water system to have. We don't have any inline storage of our own. This takes care of those problems. It also takes care of the issue that when somebody calls for more water now, we either kick out another pump or boost the pump rate. And that's an expensive way to do business. By having storage, we can equalize the pumping during the day, take advantage of lower costs, and lose some of the peak hour kinds of things that you have to pay for electrical service. And so probably save something between $100,000 and $200,000 a year in electrical costs. Through the construction process, It also provides capacity for our members. We don't have a lot of controls over how our members operate. And frankly, bad behavior affects all the other members, or could. And as we grow and get closer to our capacity, we can only produce at a max day rate and a max hour rate right now. So allow us to shave that back and allow you more flexibility in your operations. So it would be a good thing for everybody. What I have for you this evening.
What is an underground storage tank of that size? What is it made of?
These will be above ground.
Oh, I think it's one.
One was on the ground. Well, one's called a ground storage.
Oh, okay.
Basically, it's big. It looks like one of the old oil storage facilities. That'll be concrete. It's a pre-stressed concrete. They do a wire wrapping on it and spread layers of concrete. It'll be a fun project to watch and go on for a while. The other, there's some debate right now whether it'll be steel or concrete. It's a little higher than they normally build concrete tanks, but they're looking at it pretty seriously.
So does water flow in and out of these storage tanks at various times of the day, or right, it sort of gets filled up and drawn upon as it's needed, so you don't have to kick in pumps, but it's not like the water's sitting there for long
time. No, it will cycle through the storage in the two tanks on not more than a day and a half basis. We'll go through it. We average about 7 million gallons a day. This will be about 11 million in storage, so day and a half typically will be in and out of there for longer, so it's going to stay fresh.
It's interesting. Thank you. Any questions? Trustee Dart?
Maybe I just read this wrong, but was there a place where it showed Alloway's minimum purchase requirements of
yes.
water, and we are far under it?
Yes.
What does that mean to us?
Right now, not too much. It is an issue. At the start of this, when we all signed contracts, all the members signed contracts, for whatever reason, the number Alloway used actually exceeded its use at the time as a minimum. And I don't know the logic behind it. It was done before I was hired. We've made a couple of changes to our rules so that it only really comes into effect if our total number that we're obligated to buy from Manitowoc comes into play. At which time, then those minimums start to be an issue with communities.
And how likely is that to happen?
It did happen 2 years ago. Not extensively. I think there were a couple thousand dollars involved in the total issue. We are well over it last year. We'll be over it this year. And it is one of the issues we intend to address in the second go-around of the of our amendments to our water purchase agreement. I've been uncomfortable with it pretty much since I started, and the problem is it's a bond settlement that guarantees payments to our bondholders, so changing it has been difficult. Mm-hmm. As we refinance, we can clean those things up and come up with a better solution, a little more realistic of what's going to happen.
Any more potential for new partners?
Well, actually, we're talking with Wrightstown about the possibility. I'm meeting with the town of Lawrence tomorrow. There's some possibility they might be able to partner in some system extension, or extend ourselves to them, or they've reached us. Looking for something to be economical so they'd be more likely to join us. But the board has talked about it, and we're at least pursuing discussions with them. They would not be huge. They'd be about 85 million gallons a year. But that's on a par with Legend or bigger than Lawrence, so it wouldn't hurt anything. I think it would be good in a lot of perspectives. So we'll work pretty hard at it.
Thank you. Anything further? Thanks so much for coming. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Ted.
Thank you.
We still need that.
So we'll just do that. We need it now.
Okay, old item 18, the quarterly report.
Good evening.
Good evening.
It's nice to be back in front of everybody. I won't talk about chickens at all. I guess the first thing I'd like to say is that we're pretty much at a year from the date that we signed the contract. I think this has been a positive experience for everybody. I certainly have seen nothing to indicate that we did the wrong thing. I think this has been absolutely a great step for both communities. I was not able to give the second quarter report. We're going through quite a bit of transition with the new chief and everything, so it's been a little bit of time since I've been in front of you. I have given you kind of an outline of what I'm going to talk about. Any questions about any of these items, please stop me and I'll attempt to answer them. And then if there are any questions of things that I have not listed, I will also attempt to answer those questions. So the first thing is, and I think you all are aware, that the division chief, Ann Watzka, has retired as of the 1st of November. And obviously started here, did a great job, spent 30 years in the fire service. We are very proud to work with Ann. And I do want to notify all of you that at 6 o'clock on Thursday evening, there will be a party for Ann at Mackinac's. Anyone who's interested in stopping by and congratulating Ann on her career is welcome to do that. We have promoted Brent Elliott to the interim position with the intention that if that works out for Brent and it works out for us, that Brent will serve long-term as the division chief of training. Brent comes to that position with a great deal of background in the training area, and we're trying to get that position. It's a kind of a position of many functions, but we're trying to focus more on training and our officer development, and so Chief Litton has kind of put that emphasis back on that, and that is primarily why Brent was successful in getting into that position. He's got quite a bit of a background in training, very intelligent, and we wish him the most success in that job. The advisory board, that is by contract something that we need to get together, and it took us a little while to get it going and to find the right people to serve on that. And we have a meeting scheduled for the 18th. That I listed the numbers in front of you for those of you who are not aware. And what the contract said was that the village would pick two people, the city would pick two people, and then we would agree on one. The word was a disinterested party, and that doesn't mean that they aren't interested. It's a legal term. So, and the disinterested party is Chief Len Vanderweist, who is actually the chief of the Appleton Fire Department. Now, when we spoke to Len, he was the retired chief of the Appleton Fire Department and serving as an intern. In the meantime, Len has reconsidered his decision to retire and is actually going to stay on as a chief in Appleton. So nobody really saw that coming, but I don't really think that affects the fact that he's a quality individual and will be a great addition to the board. And then our representatives from Green Bay were Ann Watzka. Obviously, you know who that is. David Running is a retired university professor, and then you know Stephen Jordan. So that meeting will occur on the 18th, and we will get everybody to introduce, and we'll kind of take it from there and get the regular meeting schedule set up. So I would assume that will probably be like a quarterly thing, too, but it's really up to the board. I'll take direction from them. Budget-wise, our budget, and actually the budget meeting was earlier today, so it's done. And the budget has passed, and we came out of everything quite well this year. Chief Litton had some initiatives that he wanted to do. We were able to increase our budget a little bit in training and drill instruction, and that all plays back into his emphasis on officer development. There were some slight increases in health and dental premiums, but not bad. We had a 4% contractual raise that was a part of the three-year agreement back when the Green Bay Union agreed to pay the WRS contribution, and it was a backloaded contract, so that 4% comes due in January. The good news on that is that there were also some surprise reductions in duty security and in the workman's comp charges back to us. So that kind of offset the raise, and that's why the contractual rate that I have submitted to the village is barely up from 2013. So so that was kind of good, because that 4% stood to be a lot of money, and it was just good fortune that at the same time the state discovered a pile of money somewhere and decided they had been overcharging on due disability, so it kind of worked out in our favor. So the charge to the villages is minuscule up. It's almost not going to work out very well. And then the last thing on here is gear washers and dryers. Chief Lynn is very adamant that we get professional gear washers and dryers in all the stations as soon as we can. And the reason for that is there have been a lot of studies regarding the contamination that gets on gear after a fire and the long-term effects of not cleaning that gear. And so it will basically be our standard that all gear will be washed after fire. All firefighters will have a backup set of gear, and we'll take care of that right away, so guys won't be running around in contaminated gear with carcinogens on it. That's a good initiative, and we're going to get that done. Any questions on any of that? If not, the exceptions report, which is something that I am to provide you folks with, and I will explain it because I've been staring at it for a week and it's still confusing, but I made it, so I better know what it means. Here's what I did. The color coding is to indicate different natures of calls. What we've got basically is we have 439 EMS calls in the village since April 1st. 20 of them exceeded the 8 minutes, and those are the calls I'm reporting on. So what I did, they're not chronological. I listed them in order of the amount of time simply because it would help me to analyze it better. And then I color-coded them based on the situation that had occurred. So what you see in front of you by the legend at the bottom, if it's in pink, it means station A responded. So the very longest call, 15 minutes and 14 seconds, was a station A response. That response was because the rigs were in the city getting fuel, and as it turned out, that was on the anniversary of Arnie Wolf's death, and we allowed them to go to the memorial, and lo and behold, they got a call on East River Drive. So we have remedied that whole fuel situation. We will now be purchasing fuel from the village. These guys will no longer have to go to the city maybe to get fuel. We made those arrangements with the Public Works Department, so they won't be out of the village getting fuel anymore. So if you see, the next time we get to a station A response, we're way down to 8 minutes. So there were only actually four station A responses that exceeded 8 minutes. The 853 was way down in East River again. That is a really long run. The 850 was the prison, and that's because they don't hit raw lives until they get through the gate. So they're just sitting there. They're there, but they're just sitting there. The green calls are calls where Station 8 was already on a call in the village, and so the response came from Sea Green Bay. And I would like to think that that's an improvement, because if they were on a call in the past, I don't know what response you would have got. So basically, I didn't see a lot of trouble here. I did deal with the one about the fuel. We won't do that anymore. The two in white were a mechanical difficulty and a staffing issue where a station was unable to respond. Other than that, they were all on calls already. So as it turns out, it's 0.46% of the total number of calls, which is, I think, quite well. It's 99% of the time we're making within 8 minutes. So I think that's to me, I'm proud of that. I think we're doing very well. Are there any questions on those numbers?
Can you remind me of the verbiage of the contract? On the contract that we're going to
do? I believe it's 90%. I'll try to make the report look the same each month so that all my little color graphs and stuff start to get customary after a while.
Well done.
Was the response time different for EMS and fire?
It is. In fire, there's two. There's first rig and accumulation of 15 people.
Right.
And first rig and fire is 5, and accumulation is 9. But I only gave EMS because actually that's the only thing I could get you the other reports, but the contract just said for me to report on EMS, so that's what I do.
Thank you. Anything further?
Thanks.
Thank you, Chief. Item 8C, viewing of our new community videos.
I just wanted to show you, we bought the website. We finally finished the 4 videos. If you guys remember, we had a company come in and do the videos for us for free. There's a welcome, quality life, parks, But the videos are out on our website now, and around the videos, you'll notice around the videos, there are also some sponsors. So there are several businesses in the community that did put a sponsorship or sponsored the videos. So we thank the businesses that did do that, and I know they're working on more, and there may be more that will come. But Brad will just show the videos real quick, just so if you haven't had a chance to see them. They turned out very nice, especially your welcome video.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see that.
Is this A Star Is Born?
Yeah.
Falling Star.
Hello and welcome to the Hilton Valley. Thanks for taking time to learn about this historically progressive community. I'm Steve Vandenhoven. I'm the president of the Iron Club team for the Hilton Valley. I'm also a longtime resident. I was raised in Alloy. I spent a number of years living in some larger cities and some smaller cities. I chose to return to this walkable, bikeable, sustainable community. Aside from the fact that for me this is home, the reason for returning to Alloy. Nestled between the pier to the south and Green Bay to the north, and rivers on both the east and the west sides of the village, our 8 square mile village is in close proximity to the traffic of the city and the surrounding other countries within arm's reach. So whether you're looking for a place to live or a place to work, we just want to have fun outdoors. Welcome to the Village of Alloy. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to contact me or contact a member of the Village Board or staff. Or ask any of our 14,000 residents by historically progressive to ask for them.
Good job. So you can see all the people that have sponsored it around the outside of the video as well. And right now, if you just click on them, all you get is their logo, but some of them are actually doing videos, so when you click on them in the future, then it will go to their video that they're working with the company to put together as well.
You want to play that?
Sure.
You'll find a welcome, historically rich village of Alloway, complete with tree-lined streets and beautiful homes. Alloway is a pedestrian-friendly community with trails running the length of our east and west boundaries. These trails are perfect for walking, hiking, and biking, as we encourage residents of all ages.
Sorry.
Is to get out and be active. Our park system is second to none with over 300 acres of parkland. Our parks consist of natural preserved and active use areas utilized by program participants, residents, and visitors alike. Park facilities are available for rental to host family get-togethers, weddings, and more. When it comes to sustainability, we believe small changes make a big difference. We're proud of the green initiatives our community has adopted. The village is constantly looking for ways to reduce our daily impact on the environment and promote sustainability. Alloway, historically progressive. It's located right in our community. After all, it takes a village to raise a child.
Is that how that works?
As part of the Green Base
buffering
school district, students enrolled in our schools receive a quality education in a nurturing and challenging.
Where's this hosted
environment? Our students represent our future.
Hosted.
We take pride in keeping our future bright. The village is safe. Fruits to School program ensures students and parents a safe walk. Walk, run, or bike to the school. As part of our many green initiatives, our area schools have partnered with law enforcement, business owners, and hesitance to ensure an environment. Fully friendly commune. Alloway. Historically progressive.
Pause it. Can you just let it catch up or get ahead of you so you can catch up with it?
Finding an area. Finding an area that has it all can seem wishful thinking. Alloway is nothing short of a dream come true for those that are looking for a small, progressive community with a knack for keeping it green.
Just let it move. Let it get close to the end. That's our wireless network, right? That's really making it buffer like that. And this laptop, not the server.
Whether you're looking for a home that embraces the village's historic roots as one of Wisconsin's first American settlements and home to Vince Lombardi himself, or cutting-edge modernistic design, Alloway has it. Our family-friendly parks and natural areas provide plenty of room for outdoor activities. Sign up for one of our many recreational programs, or create your own adventure in one of our beautiful parks. Alloway also honors and accommodates the retirees of the area. Our community center has an array of programs available for seniors, and our retirement facilities rank among the best in the metro area. The village also offers top-of-the-line medical care to seniors and families, keeping our residents happy, healthy, and safe. Alloway, historically progressive.
Website, hopefully they'll feel like that and you can see them a little better, but they turned out nice like that. So. And in 5 years they will come back and update on what they think needs to be changed on. So.
Just a note, those were done free of charge for the village with the sponsors in the,
right,
in the
yeah.
First spring.
Yeah, and a special thank you to Lana, who was our intern that really spearheaded a lot of this, worked with the video company and a lot of the footwork and worked on it. So she did a nice job and followed it all the way through. So it was another great project for an intern that worked for us.
Okay, public appearances. Is there anyone you'd like to speak this evening? You may speak on any issue that you like. We can only take action on items listed in the business section of the agenda. Yes, sir. Yes, please.
My name is Ray Salter. My address is 106 South Broadway, apartment 3 in the city of Green Bay. And I'm here before the board tonight to tell them about a situation that I have. I have a two-family over in Beaufray, and I found out that there's an ordinance in the village that there can be no more than one sex offender in a single dwelling. And over the course of the last 3 years, I somehow ended up with two sex offenders. So in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to try to find out if possibly I'm grandfathered in. I don't know exactly when the ordinance was passed, or if there's a possibility that I come before the board for an exception. If those two situations don't exist, then I'm going to put a motion in for the board to reconsider changing the ordinance to either allow individuals come in front of it so that we can have exceptions for somehow to accommodate my situation. The two people that are there, they've been off parole for a number of months, I guess. They're people in their late 40s, or early 40s, late 30s. They've been there a while. They've both got jobs. And so if there's any relief I can get, maybe not a couple months for me, but for them. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Mr. Salta, there's a one in each resident, or the yeah, it's a duplex, and there's one in each. Right?
Yes.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak this evening? Yes, sir.
Pat Collins, 2310 Green Wall Street. I have a couple items here. It's kind of interesting. First one, a little humorous, talking about hens. I don't know who was on the board back when I was on, but we had a pit bull ordinance that was coming forward. And you should have seen it. They had studs on them. They were mean looking. And that was the owners. They actually invited us all to the trunk of their car so they would show us their dog. I wonder it's mean. But anyhow, hens are a little milder than the pit bulls. The other thing I mentioned on the Water Authority, I think a question was asked about the requirement for a minimum amount of water, and that was so nobody would cheat and use their wells in place of buying the water from the authority. That was a very important item, make sure everybody contributed to the dollar amount. I think that as far as back then, Cameron McCain, who was village president at that time, put in an astronomical amount of hours on that water authority. And it's good that we went that way. Good for the village. The other thing I have is a question. The fire department quarterly report, did I miss, or maybe it wasn't said, what the response time of the EMS is now? Anybody know that? Or
in the contract?
Well, I mean, or the average response time, the low, the high, for emergency.
Like 8 minutes is the threshold, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anything under 8 minutes is acceptable. And what he presented were the exceptions.
Yeah, well, EMS and Billy Rattle used to be under five. So, and I think Green Bay is looking at a goal of six, which is still above what the village enjoyed prior. You might want to look up and find out what the past history has been on EMS calls and see if doubling it from maybe under five to eight. I mean, somebody's having a heart attack, 8 minutes, you're outside of the area where you can revive the person. It's more like a goal of 4 or 5 minutes you want to get there. So anyway, that's something the board may want to look at as far as, you know, are we slipping as far as what we had before as far as response time. Let's see what else I get here.
Can I just make a comment on that?
Sure.
Wouldn't that average number be? Could we ask that be included in our in our quarterly report?
I'd imagine it's going to be much lower than eight because we have 439 calls, mm-hmm. and 20 of them are above the threshold.
Yes.
If you remember, those were the dashboards were to make sure that there weren't too many incidences above. And I think it's like you said, 90% have to be within that 8 minute threshold. But I would imagine if you take the average, there are going to be some 2 and 3 minutes, and so that average is going to be much closer to what Mr. Collins is talking about than the 8 minute maximum.
You might want to look at three numbers, the low, the average, and then the high. And I hope someday if I ever have another heart attack, I'm not on the high one.
Well, and like you said, we knew that the that that's the southeast part of the village was going to be the most challenging part. It always has been to get there.
Okay, the other thing is on number 10, as far as the high density, I think I mentioned PDD on that there. It looks like maybe you're going that direction, which I think would be very good for the village to have that additional control. The last item, should be figures to what I wanted to come here to talk about, has to do with the size of the board, and that's up for reconsideration this evening. And there's a couple things on that. One is the board could, just by majority vote, vote to change the size of the board from four trustees, six down to four. And that would solve possibly one of the problems. I think one of the problems you might be running into is holding a referendum on the same day as the election of trustees. And if you just voted it up or down by majority vote, you would then be ready. You wouldn't need a referendum. You wouldn't need the price of a referendum and the confusion of a referendum at the same time as the election. The other alternative would be to have the referendum in the April election and then specify you are voting for either two or three trustees, depending on the results of the referendum, which I think also would be legal. There are different ways you can do it. So anyhow, I'm not too sure what you're going to consider tonight, but that's what you get to pay the big bucks for. So that's all I have. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else you'd like to speak this evening? Thanks for your patience for public appearances. I know they're usually towards the top of the agenda rather than number 9. Item 10, public hearing to consider adoption of zoning ordinance 2013-12, amending site plan design and review ordinance 11.29. Is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to this issue? Again, is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to this issue? And the third time, is there anyone who'd like to speak with regard to this issue? Okay, we will close the public hearing and move on to item 11, action regarding the adoption of zoning ordinance 2013-12. Is there a motion with regard to this item?
I'll move to adopt.
Trustee Zeller moves to adopt. Is there a second? Trustee Gass seconds. Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Item 12, action regarding the reconsideration of board action from October 15th to reduce the number of trustees on the board to 4. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Gass?
I would move that we reconsider the action taken on October 15th.
This one? I'm sorry, you're right, thanks. Is there a motion to remove this item from the table? We followed a similar action to the last one. Trustee Gass, do you?
I'll make the motion to take it off the table.
Is there a second? Trustee Genrick, seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is active. Trustee Gast.
Yeah. I would reinstitute the motion to reconsider the board action from October 15th to place the number of trustees in the village to referendum vote.
Is there a second? Trustee Genrick? Discussion?
It's a discussion of reconsideration.
Any discussion on the motion to reconsider? Trustee Gass?
Well, I bring the motion to reconsider, for several reasons. As I stated at the October 15th meeting, I think that the public in Alloway is best served, with 7 trustees. Including the village president. I think that there is a diversity of opinions and point of view that I think is critical, you know, to the efficient operation of this village. Historically, the board complement has been at 7 trustees. And considering the size of Alloway, I believe that the residents are better represented with 7 people, you know, 7 different voices to contact and to represent their interests. This has been, as I mentioned at the October 15th meeting, an extremely active board, not only with respect to the internal village committees that we sit upon, but I think even more critical in this day and age is the external committees that we're all involved in. Green Bay Met, you know, being one important one because, of course, the rates charged by the Met get passed on to our village residents. And one of the concerns I have is that if we reduce the board complement down to, I'm getting confused with the math, to 4, I just don't think we're going to get the active participation in those external committees that we do with a complement of 7, you know, different people participating. There's other areas, not only the Green Bay Met, but the Room Tax Commission, you know, the Planning Commission for the county. And like I said, I fear if we reduce the board size that we'll get less active participation in those partnerships that we have with other municipal entities. I suspect that the 5-person board would be competent. I mean, I have no reason to think that that wouldn't be the case. I don't think it would be as effective as a 7-person board. And I don't see the marginal cost savings to be worth the loss, I think, in effectiveness and efficiency. And I think with a referendum vote, there are costs entailed in that process as well to even put it up to referendum vote. Probably one of the things that made me really consider reconsideration was after the last vote on October 15th, you know, Debbie circulated, you know, some frequently asked questions on direct legislation. And one of the questions posed was, must a village or city hold a referendum election on an issue merely because a resident or group of residents request one by petition? And the answer to that question was no. We don't have to do that. And there is a process, you know, that can be followed if there is significant public interest in the issue of board size or, you know, adequacy or lack of adequacy of representation. If a petition is circulated and signatures secured which equal or exceed 15% of the votes cast in the village at the most recent gubernatorial election, then the issue automatically becomes placed on the referendum vote. And I raise that question or that issue because I don't see this as being a hot-button topic within the village. We've had a couple of residents express, you know, their opinions on the subject, but I don't see it as being something that is, you know, hotly debated within the community. And one of the fears that I have is, and regrettably, you know, voter turnout, you know, is oftentimes low. And unless this issue is a hot-button topic, I don't see a lot of public interest and motivation, you know, to cast a ballot. I think any ballots cast or the resulting vote might be skewed or might not represent the true sentiments of the majority of the village residents because it isn't or doesn't appear to be an issue of great wide, you know, community concern. So I think any election would be, you know, potentially skewed because people aren't focusing on that issue. And then I thought, you know, as I look back at the agenda, one of the other issues that I thought was important in bringing this motion to reconsideration is we had a petition signed by quite a few different residents near the Hilltop Apartments. The board took action on that and said, no, we're not going to look at that space for parkland or acquire it by eminent domain. You know, why couldn't that have gone to referendum vote? You know, so as I thought about it more after the last meeting, I thought, you know, that this is, you know, something that the board should consider, you know, at the present time. And not put it out to referendum vote. And I think that, you know, if the reconsideration motion is granted, I will make the motion that we not take any action on those requests And if there is sufficient interest within the village to look at this, then there is a process for direct legislation that can be followed. So those are the reasons that I brought the matter back for reconsideration, because I just don't think it's something that we should put on a referendum vote, because I just don't see it as the community being engaged in this issue presently. Not that it couldn't come back at some future point in time if there is significant, you know, public concern about the issue, but I don't see it, and I don't think we should put it to referendum vote, because there is a process available for direct legislation should the residents of the village want to make this an issue that they vote upon. So that's why I brought it back to the table.
Any further discussion on reconsideration? Trustee Genrick?
I think Trustee Gass summarized my feelings pretty well, emphasizing the diversity that the board can bring, as well as the expertise that a lot of people can provide. I think we have a $9 million budget, and the cost of the board at the moment is less than 0.5% of that budget. I think it's money well spent to have more people involved in the process, have more trustees available to the citizenry so that they may feel more comfortable approaching one versus someone else. So I just think it's a good number, and I think it works.
As you know, I voted against this when it first came up for the reasons that I mentioned back then, and I've thought of a few more now. A lot of villages in the surrounding area have 7 members on their board. Bellevue is one that does not. Bellevue, as you know, has been growing up rather slowly over the past 50 years, and you know they're very careful with adding to their budgets in many ways, and I think their board probably will be up to 7 in the foreseeable future. And I think Hobart might be, is that right, Tracy? Your recollection, Hobart might be at 5 as well, but many of the surrounding municipalities have boards of 7. I think it represents a good diversity. I also think that I don't understand the logic if we somehow go from 7 to 5 that people are going to be more likely to attend board meetings. It's not that people aren't attending board meetings when they can't because they're figuring out there's 6 other folks that can take care of business. They're on the road, they're at work, they're working nights in the healthcare system, and sometimes there are simply conflicts. And so I don't understand the logic of having a smaller board. We're going to mean that people are going to be more likely to show up. Another the issues of quorums and of walking quorums. And if you have a 5-member board, you could have a quorum at 3, which means that any 2 people could, if they talked outside of a board meeting, could sway the results of a decision at a board meeting, which means that no board member could talk to another board member about any village issue outside of an open meeting. And we try to refrain from that anyway. And you've all noticed Tracy sending out emails on my behalf, letting me remind you not to email one another, not to respond, and we're very careful about those things. But there are some real practical implications to reducing the size of the board from 7 to 5 as well. So I'm just simply not in favor of it. I think it's a bit irresponsible to assume that it is a hot button issue. And I think that if we reduce the size of the board to 5, it would have unforeseen consequences, even for us, but especially for residents. Residents, I don't think, understand the amount of work and input that it takes, and I don't think they understand the effects that reducing it to 5 would really have. So I'm not in favor of this. I wasn't before, and I am not in favor of it now, of reduction. Trustee Dart?
I also heard after that first meeting that there would be a problem with the quorum, and I remember when I first came on the board, Trustee Green was very kind and nice enough to take me around to all the detention ponds and all the sites where the ponds were going to be, and explain all the issues with them, the good and the bad, and you don't, if you can't do that with somebody else and help them to understand what's going on, I don't think that's healthy for the board. People have to be able to get information from other people. not for making their decision, but to be gathering enough data and real information that you can make a quality decision. I also have a couple other issues on that is Bellevue may be operating with five, but they have a much wider variety of staff people that can cover different areas. They have a full-time zoning person and a full-time economic development person. In my notes here, I have some other ones they have. They have a human resource specialist. They have two building inspectors. Our staff's really light, and I think it's helpful for them to have the information that we can gather at different meetings and things that we attend. I think challenges in older community with redevelopment are very different than the challenges of a growing community. And, they have to be creative, very creative. And I think the wider base of people you have to help come up with those creative ideas and suggestions is very useful for the board. I see this board as not egocentric or antagonistic, but they really want to know they want to hear from the people. They want to know and they want to come up with the best answer collaboratively and working together. And they may not agree, but they work it out to the best, I think the best for our residents. It's got to be my way. It's like, okay, we have to give this and take this because people are different in this community and we need them all represented. Just not somebody's idea and they want to run with it. I think this board's very collaborative. And I have seen some very creative and unique ideas come from meetings that you wouldn't think were possible. Sometimes I'm just amazed at solutions that are arrived at that one person could have never came up with. It's the broad base of opinions, I think, that is really important in a redeveloping community or a community that doesn't have room for growth. I think they have more challenges to face. And I think the challenges continue to grow in a community. We have our TIF district now. We have historical areas. We have new mandates and the government keeps changing things, unfunded mandates. And there's just got to be creative ways and more, a broader base of people can give you more creative ideas.
I'll entertain some more discussion. Just let me give you another word about process. We're discussing right now on the reconsideration. If this passes, the original motion to place this issue on the April ballot would be active and on the floor, and we would vote on that. Okay, so this vote is just to whether we should bring that issue back up. You're not going to be voting on this on that issue next. Does everyone understand? Okay, Trustee Zell.
Then two questions on that process. The motion on the floor, on that motion, that we're presently discussing, there has to be a vote of at least five.
It's the majority plus one.
Majority plus one. Okay. Then going back to our original discussion, it's my understanding that the direct legislation petition is a binding referendum, whereas what we discussed and voted on would have been an advisory referendum. Am I correct on that?
No, I believe. That the board has the ability by affirmative vote to place an issue on the ballot. If the board doesn't do that, then the public has a right to submit petitions with the required number of signatures, and then the board doesn't get a say. I mean, it goes on the ballot if you have enough signatures on a petition.
So, and I believe that that direct legislation petition was over last referendum that went before the voters was a direct legislative petition that was a binding referendum on the health insurance benefits. So I believe that if the topic is brought in that manner, then there is no decision making by the board. That the decision would be final as a result of the referendum.
If
it was brought in that manner.
If a petition is circulated with the referendum question and it is signed by enough village residents, 15% or more, that voted in the last gubernatorial election, then the board has no discretion. It will go on unchanged. I mean, you skip right past the board and go right on the ballot. And that's the real crux of direct legislation, which mm-hmm. is the voters can put something on the ballot, the board doesn't have a say about it.
Including the wording, right? The actual wording in that those circulated papers would go on the ballot, is that correct?
One step further, though.
There is actually. I was looking at Debbie's frequently asked questions that she circulated on this. And what can happen is when the required number of signatures on petition is submitted to the board. This is the step I overlooked. Then the village board, in this case, can, without alteration, either pass the ordinance or resolution within 30 days. And we would then have the ability to do that. Or if we do not do that and pass it, then it shall be submitted to the electorate. So the board can circumvent the referenda election by simply passing it.
Mm-hmm.
But if the board doesn't pass it, then it shall go on the ballot as a referendum question.
And then if it makes it to that point on the referendum, the wording is set by the direct legislation petition, and the results are binding upon the village then. That's what I'm remembering.
Mm-hmm.
But whereas if the board places the matter on the as a referendum with a question to be written or developed by the board or by the village attorney, that the results are not binding, they are advisory. That's what I remember on our last go around on this, which was quite a few years ago.
It makes very little difference. I mean, I understand the logical difference between the two, but even if it's not binding, if it goes to the people and the majority of them say do it, then in my mind, I'm doing it. They've spoken, whether it's binding or not.
I would think that if the board made the decision without a petition, from the residents by the required voters, I would believe that the board would have the authority to put it on the referendum as either a binding or non-binding. I mean, I think that would be up to the board.
Okay.
To determine. I mean, if we took a vote to say put it on the ballot, I mean, it would be incumbent upon us to declare whether that's going to be a binding referendum or an advisory referendum.
Mm-hmm.
And then whichever way the board would decide would dictate, the effect of the outcome.
But and again, in my mind, I'm not going to spend the money on having putting something on a referendum to be advisory and then not do what the people say, unless it's barely passes or something like that. So, in my mind, if we're going forward with a referendum, it might as well be binding because I'm going to do whatever the results of that referendum are.
Okay.
Okay, that answers my two questions.
Any further discussion? Yes, Trustee Green.
I was just going to say, I echo the sentiment of everybody who spoke here. The other thing is I don't think we've done a really good job of letting people know all the things we're involved in. I mean, we all know what we're involved in, but one of the things is maybe on our website under board, because when I started going through, not only the village committees all of us are involved in, but the things we represent with the village outside of the village that everybody's involved in, it's quite a workload to go down to five and still get the representation throughout the community. So just another piece for consideration.
And yeah, I guess one last thing for me, one, although rules change, you know, there are trustees on this board, and you might not have signed up for doing the kind of work that it takes to help to run a village with four colleagues. And because there's a certain amount of work that has to be done, and you either divide it by seven or you divide it by five. And all of you ran for election assuming that you're going to have six colleagues to help you with this, and, of course, the village staff. And the rules of the game would then be changed, and we'd be asking each one of you to do at least a little bit more. And so that's something to consider. Trustee Gass.
Two things. I mean, you know, one other, I think, important factor in terms of reconsidering this issue, because, you know, as I indicated at the last meeting, my sense and my personal belief is seven is the right number, is the last time we had an election, I can't remember how many people we had. I think there were 10 people vying for three seats. So apparently there's an interest in the community to you know, serve the community. And I hate to short circuit, you know, some people having that interest and have more limited opportunities to do that. Just a point of clarification in terms of the reconsideration process. This vote on reconsideration, the one we're going to take before we get to reopening the issue, my interpretation of the policy is that requires a simple majority. There is language in here, and there's some additional criteria and conditions if a reconsideration vote being put in law later removed on newly discovered evidence that wasn't available at the initial reconsideration vote. That renewal of the motion has to be by a majority plus one.
You're right. I remember when this was put together some 5 years ago, it was really put together so that there was really nothing in the rules the way that we had described them to prevent someone from reconsidering every meeting, you know, ad infinitum until they got what they wanted and it was brought up again. And so this was written so that we can reconsider once with a simple majority. If the vote to reconsider fails, you can't bring it up again ever, unless there's new information with regard to that issue that wasn't available during the first attempt at reconsideration, right. In which case you can renew the reconsideration, but then you have to have a majority plus one.
You're correct.
Trustee Coburn.
Yeah, I just a couple of comments since I had offered the original motion. When the concept was first suggested, we heard from a couple of residents, I thought it would be an opportunity to engage in conversation as has been occurring tonight, but getting back to some more fundamental issues, over the last number of years, government, state, federal, and local has been hard-pressed to meet budgets. Business has been hard-pressed, and downsizing has been very common over the last 5-10 years, so you know, with that, I thought it would be an opportunity to engage the citizens in more conversation regarding the size of the government and give them a chance to be heard on that.
I agree. If folks are interested, then they can come forward and show they're interested. I would be perfectly willing to consider the payment that we all receive for serving on the board, and for me, that's not the issue. We could divide that in different ways so that we're not getting compensated the way that we are now. It's just the work. I think that I know, speaking personally, that I spend enough time. I don't spend 40 hours a week working for the village, but I spend enough time, and my family suffers the consequences of that. And if you're going to ask me to do more, then you know I'm going to have to make some decisions as well. So I don't think it's I don't think it's outrageous the number of people that we have on the board. I don't think it's outrageous what we compensate, if you want to call it that, people for serving on the board. If we figured out an hourly rate, we'd kind of probably all blush. But I'd be willing to consider the compensation. And I know there are rules with regard to that, that you have to sort of phase that in, and we can definitely discuss that. So for me, it's not the money. We could figure out how much we're going to save by going from 7 to 5 and then just, you know, distribute those savings amongst all of our stipends. That's not the issue. The issue for me is the time and the work that's involved in helping out, and that, in my mind, should not increase for the village board members. All right, is there any further discussion? All right, the motion on the floor is to reconsider. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, the motion on the floor is to send the to form a referendum for reducing the board size from 7 to 5 to the April election. Trustee Gast?
I'll make a substitute motion that the board take no action on this issue at the present time.
Is there a second? I'll second. Discussion? We've had a lot of the discussion in the previous motion to reconsider, but is there anything further? This will be the final vote if we vote now, so you know where we are in the process. The motion on the floor is to take no action at this time with regard to this issue. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Roll, please. Trustee Kopisch?
No.
Trustee Gingrich?
Aye.
Trustee Green?
Aye.
Trustee Van Noven is aye. Trustee Dart?
Aye.
Trustee Gast?
Aye.
Trustee Zeller?
No.
Motion carries. Item 13, action regarding the recommendation to approve the Exonet contract for dark fiber service for Alloway. Is there a representative here that wants to speak? I'll take a motion then first. Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Green?
Move to approve.
Is there a second? Trustee Dart seconds. Discussion. Mr. Burke, do you want to?
Just real briefly, this is the agreement that covers the fiber optic and covers the two fiber optic strands that would be dedicated to Alloway as part of this agreement with Extranet. So this is not the system design, construction, permits, and so forth. This is simply the agreement between Alloway and Extranet that would allow us to use two strands of the fiber optic system at any point in time from now and into the future, and as the system expands as well, we would continue to be able to use that, which is of some value to us because we do plan to at some point in time use some of that capacity for our own systems. It has been reviewed by Village Council and Legal Council for Extranet. There's a copy of the last fax or last email between the two parties that just summarizes the changes that they made to the agreement. It is their opinion, in my opinion, that we can go ahead with this agreement to cover the fiber optic services as it relates to us. We do have with us this evening Kim Egan representing Extranet, and I believe he has a few comments he'd like to make and certainly available for questions if you have some.
Good evening. I will step forward. I'm just a voice from here. Thanks, Craig, and thank you,
Sure. Tracy. We're going to have to ask you to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We have to get it on the.
Oh, I understand.
Record.
Kim Egan,
I represent Buell Consulting on behalf of Extant, and our client in Alloway is Sprint. And we want to thank the board for the considerations of the dark fiber agreement, and special thanks to Craig and Tracy for their considerations. If you have any questions about the network, it is simply a distributed antenna service network that will be run from Green Bay through Alloway, including one node site in Bellevue. And this distributed antenna service, you're one of three in Wisconsin to have this. Madison and Fitchburg was the first market, Sheboygan second market, and the Green Bay, Alloway, Bellevue system would be the third. So there you go. Sorry.
How many carriers could you handle? I know you said Sprint, but is there any capacity for any others?
Generally, when Extant builds this system, they're looking up to three carriers per system, depending on the demands. As we know, as equipment gets smaller, the needs are growing exponentially. You can expect other carriers to show up.
Have there been any problems with Sheboygan, or was the first one that you...
In Madison, we're all at the same point. Fortunately, we're just finishing our underground, and probably within 2 weeks, we'll be pulling our overhead and then finally mounting the antennas in all three markets.
I talked with the folks in the Madison-Fitchburg project, and they're very enthused about the project, and it's gone very well for them, and they feel it offers advantages to them. So they were enthusiastic about the project and were very positive on it.
In a practical sense, what is the average Alloway resident, are they going to know any difference? Are they going to...
I think the experience will be measured more as more carriers come. The whole idea is as the handheld experience becomes more critical, we're finding that in a U.S. cell-dominated market, the Sprint and Verizon users, traditionally your visitors and your newbies to town, are walking in with prepays and handhelds with little coverage because we're U.S. cell-dominated. So you can expect in the Wisconsin market, you're going to see Sprint and Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile accelerate on networks like this. Where in Iowa, you're going to see USL jump on that network. So I can tell you that we represent St. Paul, Minneapolis, Des Moines, Cedar Rapids, as well as the Wisconsin markets, and they've all been received fairly similar. It's just who's first to market.
You should note, and for our visitors, that this has been run by the village attorney to make sure that everything is in order.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
I just think dark fiber sounds cool.
It does. Dark night, dark fiber. We have a motion. Right? Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item 14, action regarding the implementation of a PTO program. You want to entertain some discussion before we... Tracy.
Okay. We're just kind of taking baby steps forward on the whole PTO. So tonight, I wanted to talk to you about... We talked about this briefly at our staff meeting, just to discuss some different options with it. Basically, what we came up with at that meeting, again, this has not gone out to the staff as a whole. It has not gone to any kind of committee. This is just us kind of talking about it at a staff level. Looking at sick leave, moving that to a PTO block, doing some surveys and some programs that are in the area, or just looking at different programs that are out there. When the sick leave has been moved, it's been anywhere between 6 and 8 days that has been moved into a PTO block. Currently, the village has 12 days a year that the employees get for sick leave. The other thing that we would promote moving into the PTO block is vacation. And right now, if you remember, we have our vacation schedule. We have two different schedules, basically, that we are using, one for administrative and clerical, and then one for basically our public works. What we would recommend is we go to one consistent vacation schedule, and it is a schedule that is located on the memo, rather than having the two. It would be the 2 weeks prorated upon hire, and then going at the other end, with the public works employees, anyone that's been here over the 20 year, gets one extra day a year after that. So anyone that's over that would be frozen at that amount. There would be no more vacation incurred after that point. Personal days right now, again, that would be moved to the PTO block. We get 3 days a year. It's prorated on the first year, and we recommend moving 3 days into the PTO block. Maximum carryover from the PTO block. Right now, we allow 15 days as the carryover. We would like to continue with a 15-day maximum carryover from PTO to the next year. So to give you an example of the PTO block, if we would go with the things that we just talked about, the sick leave, let's say we go with the 8 days just to go on the high end of it. For sick days, you would have 8, 10 days of vacation. Again, this is for someone just coming, new employee, and then 3 days of personal. So the PTO block would consist of 21 days available for the first full year of employment. Then we also have our sick leave that we have accumulated already. There are many employees that have worked here for a long time and have accumulated sick leave. And a lot of communities have put it into what they call a lot of different names, but extended leave bank is one of the terms that you hear out there. And the sick leave that has been accumulated is moved into the extended leave bank. And then that extended leave bank is only available for employees to use if there's an FMLA leave that they need to take, a medical necessity lasting 3 or more consecutive days, or the payout is done upon retirement. Once that amount is moved into there, that is capped at the employee's current rate, and they cannot add any more time into that. With the ELB, the extended leave bank, there's a lot of things that would need to be determined with that, and we certainly have not sat down and made all those determinations yet. So, and those are listed kind of on the bottom, different things that need to be talked about or decisions made in regard to the extended leave bank and how that would be handled. The other thing that goes into PTO potentially, and you hear good and bad, some communities do short-term disabilities, some do not. So it's really different in every community. Right now, the village does provide a long-term disability plan for all of our employees. The village pays for the 180-day start, so when someone has an illness or an injury, 180 days later, long-term disability would kick in. Employees are able to buy down that to as low as 30 days. Some employees here do have the 30 days. They can also buy the 60, 90, or 120 days. And that is through the retirement on that ETF. That's what the ICI program goes through, and that's what we currently have. We did some checking into short-term disability. And short-term policies can start anywhere from 7 days after an accident to 7 days after an illness. Estimated premium, and again, this is very hard to nail down because you can do a lot of different things. You can go more than 7 days. You can go less than 7 days. There's a lot of different options. You can also set a price that they would get or a cost that they would get $500 a week or they would get $600 a week or they would get $700 a week or whatever amount you would like to set, and that all affects the premium amount. But looking at that, estimated cost anywhere between $5,000 and $7,000 a year to put in place a short-term disability. Looking at it and talking to other communities, also talking to our health advisor, some communities have actually stayed with the long-term disability. Our long-term disability, like I said, you can buy down as low as 30 days. So after any kind of illness or injury, then 30 days later, the long-term disability would kick in. The problem is that gap between, and for those employees that have been here for quite a while and have sick leave built up and then they have that extended leave bank, it really is not as much of an issue for them because they have that time to cover it, that they can go into that extended leave bank and use that to get them to that 30 days. You also have the fact that in the PTO, at a minimum, an employee that is new here would have 21 days. And again, if they were ill or something happened, they would potentially wipe out all of their PTO time to try to get to that 30 days and still be short a bit. So you do have a potential gap in there.
And that's assuming they got sick without having taken any PTO and they
exactly.
had all 21
yes.
days to spend.
Yes, they had all their days left and they got sick and then they were able to use them all.
So chances are they're going to be 15 to 20 days or, you know, short of,
exactly.
of 30.
Yes. So there is a gap in there. You know, some employees really don't have a need for short-term disability because of the extended leave bank and the PTO. They would be able to cover and get to where they needed to be. Some employees have a need for some kind of, you know, coverage between the two. And again, that's something we need to check into further. I have called into the ICI, which I called early this week, late last week, and they haven't called me back yet to see if they have any short-term disability or it can be brought down any lower than 30. I don't believe it can, but I was going to double-check with them anyway. So this needs to be researched and figured out a little bit more so as well with disability and how we want to try to bridge that gap for the employees. So that's really kind of the crux of it right now, the main things in it. And again, there's a lot of specifics behind the fact. We can certainly say, okay, so, you know, this is what PTO blocks can be, this is what's going to go into it. We still have to decide how it will be used, how it can be used, what can be rolled over, if there's things that can be moved into other banks of time. So there's a few things that need to be figured out yet, and that I think if we can get a feel from you folks, what you think on maybe the building blocks of it, and then the specifics still need to be figured out and exactly how we're going to manage it and move forward on it.
Tracy, do you have an overall indication from the board, from the other, I mean, what you're asking for is the decisions on the building blocks, and then you're going to put them together in certain ways, and we're going to react to it, but from the other direction, sort of any overall principles, like in my mind, you know, one question the board has to answer, and I can't recollect whether we did or not, is the sick days that have been accumulated that would have been eligible for a payout at the time of retirement, will those still be paid out? So are those sort of off the table, on the side, they're always going to work the way that they used to, and then we're going to have this other system going forward. And then the next one is, you know, will that system of being able to accumulate sick days and bank them for payout, that in my mind, that's going to end. I mean, that's going to stop. But I think the board needs to weigh in on, you know, even if we don't make the January 1st deadline with an entire PTO system, which we put as our goal, we can do that regardless of all the specifics. And in my mind, you need to get the board to weigh in on, is that an absolute assumption that you should be working for, that that's going to end January 1st? And then, you know, I guess some overall guidance with regard to the concept of short-term disability. In my mind, it just complicates things, and I think you hit the nail on the head. What we have is, for the people who haven't been here long enough, they have no recourse to get up to the 30 days where the long-term disability would kick in, and so we just have to make sure that people are protected. But in my mind, short-term disability is just adding another layer of complexity to it that I don't think is quite necessary. So I'd like to hear the board weigh in on some of these larger issues so that when we get the pieces of the building blocks put together, you kind of know how to assemble them. Another thing I was thinking about, I know that some organizations do this, is having a sick pool so that you might be able to carry over a certain number in your own personal ELB, but then you might be able to contribute to a pool of sick days that someone who gets caught in that, not being able to span that gap because they don't have enough PTO accumulated to make it to the 30 days, could kind of draw from that collective pool. But there have to be certain rules around that too. Trustee Zeller.
Just so I understand where you're coming from, Steve, on the short term, on the short term disability, you would like the practice to continue, that the employees could buy down to 30 days, that the village is not providing the buy down, that the employees are electing to do so.
For that's long term disability.
Yeah, they're buying down the long term to 30,
to 30
from 180,
and that we have no short term disability policy, you know, program that
yes.
the village would help to subsidize. And
yes, I would agree with you. I'd get behind what your concept there is, that the employee can consciously elect to buy that down to the 30 days based on their tolerance for risk, but they have that 180-day backstop automatically built in that we're providing.
Yes.
And then on the other, on your other point, just for the peace of mind of the current employees, I would expect that their sick leave bank would not be altered at all, that they would be able to retain what they have up to this point.
And
we would
use it?
And they could use it for their... for the purposes that were promised to them previously.
Okay.
But in taking that into consideration, I would make changes to the schedule that the staff came up with. So, you know, I don't want to sign off on this
right.
Completely because I want input on items 1 through 5 here, but I definitely think that those... hours or days that have been accumulated, that they should be able, that the employees should be able to use those as they had been previously able to.
So they can, in essence, use them upon retirement.
Upon retirement.
As a payout, and
as
they should still
payout.
Be able to. Okay, I agree. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that the staff hears some sort of consensus from the board without voting on it, just so that as they build the building blocks that they have certain assumptions.
And I'm sure.
And the January 1st thing with that stopping is
that
also...
That would stop. Okay. That well would stop. And I agree that we shouldn't add this short-term layer or an additional benefit, as you had said, that could be something that the employee... do on their own, because there is a short-term disability marketplace that they can purchase into based on their, you know, their tolerance of risk. So
I still think that we might be able to develop something internally that they wouldn't necessarily have to go out on their own if they're a new employee with this pool idea. But we can. I think that's more of a detail. What I want to get is the philosophy behind this. And so, can I hear from some other folks so that they can... Trustee Dart?
I have some questions because I don't quite understand. When we talk about the people that have already accumulated X amount, they can't put any of their new sick days into that block.
Right.
Because they have enough.
Yeah.
But then they can keep those because they're now PTO days, so they could, in essence, use those for vacation. So they're actually just getting a lot more vacation. And they still have all their PTO days, or their sick leave days, right? So they would get, I don't know, of their weeks, 5 weeks vacation, and their new six PTO days for sickness, and
mm-hmm.
their three, so they could actually just use all of that for vacation.
Sure.
Because they already have enough sick leave, they don't have to set it aside.
That's right.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But
if you follow the schedule,
the formula is
we can
control the quantity of dates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then
do you agree with the philosophy of leave? The sick days that have been accumulated, and the way that you could use those sick days, that should remain. That's sort of,
I think they re-earn that, so it's kind of hard to take that away.
Trustee Gass?
No, I agree. I mean, you know, I mean, the employees you know, received promises and assurances, and we were operating under a policy, and we shouldn't take that away. I mean, just like, you know, I suspect we're going to wind up capping vacation at no more than 5 weeks. But for those people who've already vested and earned, you know, then they should be frozen up wherever they're. I mean, the purpose of this, I think, is to modify it to make it more equitable overall between the village's employer and the employees by going to the PTO system. But it's never been my intention, I don't think anybody else's, to basically take something away that any employee has already earned and is receiving the benefit of. I mean, it'll affect a lot of people and most people, but some of our longer-term employees, I mean, that we should take anything away that they've already earned. But going forward, there will be some caps that you know, will apply to the newer employees as they reach the upper echelon. So.
And so regardless of where we land, whether we're ready with all the details January 1st or not, you agree that the old system of accumulating sick leave that can be used as a payout, that is going to end January 1st? I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I think Tracy explained it, you know, pretty well here. I mean, to the extent people have earned considerable sick days, they're already banked. If we adopt a PTO policy, we'll have to do something with those, and this extended leave bank sounds like an appropriate place to deposit those. But, I mean, they'll still be able to utilize them consistent with past practice, but they just won't earn any more that goes into the ELB.
Right. I'm assuming that, you know, if something goes wrong, and we just can't decide because there are too many moving parts and too many details. In my mind, the one thing that is going to happen January 1st is that, let's say that we just can't decide and we're going with the exact same system we have now, and we have silos, we don't have PTO, that the one thing that's going to stop January 1st is the accumulation of the payout benefit for accumulated sick leave.
Correct.
Okay. And then the third question is about kind of the short-term disability, how you want to go down that path or not. That's a whole other, you know, variable in this equation. And I think I heard Trustee Zeller saying, you know, let's leave that to the employee and let's not go down that path. Trustee Dart, I don't know.
I don't think I comment on that, but I would agree.
Okay. Trustee Gass, do you have any?
No,
I agree. I think it adds a whole other level of complexity. You know, the employee, depending, I think, as Paul said, depending on their risk comfort, you know, they can buy it down if they want to. You know, but we provide a reasonable backstop, you know, the 180-day mark if nobody does anything.
Tracy, can you tell me what the rough price is per month to buy down from 180 to 30?
I knew you were going to ask that, and I have the book in my office. I forgot to grab it. If you want me to go grab it, it's not real expensive, but I'll go grab it real quick,
okay.
If that's okay.
Thank you. All right, this side of the ledger. Trustee Green?
Extended leave disability bank, definitely. I'd say January 1, you know, that's captain go. And nobody should lose anything they've already gotten.
What about the short-term disability? Do you want to have them explore that, or do you want to leave that alone?
I'd leave it alone. They can pay it down if they like. I'd like to know what the rates are. But to add another policy in the middle of there, I agree.
We're talking about two different things. What Tracy's getting is the long-term disability.
Right.
And they can buy down from 180 to 30. The
correct.
Short-term disability is a complete separate to go from 30 to down to 7. Or
correct.
Like
no.
So.
No
and
short-term.
And you want to leave that out altogether. I want
to
get a little bit of input from Trustee Genrich and Trustee Kopisch before we discuss other themes here. Trustee Genrich.
Short-term out as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I think we've got a fairly good plan here, and leave it as it is. I'm good with that.
So the employees would retain their sick leave benefits that they've accumulated that they can get the way that and don't explore short-term disability and come back or high water January 1st, the accumulation of sick leave for potential payout will end regardless of what system. Okay.
And then I had a
good
question.
I think those are three good sort of themes to start with. Let's add more if you'd like. Trustee Green, I think you had something that you wanted to finish.
I was just going to say, maximum carryover, almost every PTO system I've seen in employers is capped maximum carryover, so I like that. Also, there's always been a hardship where people can, you always have employees who have more than they're going to use. The donation pool that you were mentioning, you know, I've always seen that work with employers. But then
so
I really...
should there be a carryover? I mean, that's a good place to start.
Right, and then how much?
Rather than talking about the number of 15, that's a detail that I think will be part of the building blocks. I think we need to discuss larger issues. Should there be a carryover?
Yes, but capped.
Is that 15 every year accumulating then?
We can change the number.
No,
no,
that wouldn't be my
period.
You've got to use them next year or they're gone.
Okay.
In some places are less than 15. Yeah, and the cap's
some
solid.
Places are
you
zero.
Can't keep roll. Yeah, some places are zero, which.
So do we like the idea of a carryover?
Yes.
All right, so let's. Yes. Tracy, we'll build that in, and then we can debate whether it's 15 days and whether it's.
Or whether it's five.
It's gonna, and all these things are going to work together because, like Trustee Zeller said, it kind of depends on the schedule here.
Now, question on the carryover. Can that carryover be used for anything, or does it turn into sick days then?
I think it remains PTO.
PTO.
But that would be something we can discuss as well.
Because sick days are going away. The silos are gone.
Missile.
Yeah.
All right, and then I just want to poll the board informally on one more thing. This extended leave bank, you like this idea? I mean, obviously, as opposed to what we have now, this extended leave bank makes some sense to you to bank away some days for yourself that could be used to bridge that gap between the time you get sick and when long-term disability kicks in, however low that you want it down to. What about this idea of some community, if you have leftover, that you can donate to this sort of community pool of PTO days?
Now, question with
those
that
people,
is, it's all different pay rates, right? I mean, so how do you, I don't know how to manage
that. I don't know. I just know that it's done. I don't.
Yeah. It's a nice thought, that's for sure.
Trustee Dart?
Instead of having a pool, I've seen it done like this, and where you can choose to give it to somebody. Because there might be some hostility if someone just wasted all of theirs and just took off every day, and then you saved some of yours, and they just get given out. And but if you would choose to do that because of a certain illness and a person didn't waste or squander their time, that you could choose to do it.
Okay.
Yeah, and I have to say that I've seen it work like pennies to more than. My use of pool was more people could donate it to a specific person if they wanted to, because, otherwise you do run into the abuse potential.
Trustee Zeller.
Step back to this sick leave accumulation and payoff. Not PTO, but the sick leave that has already been accumulated and is sitting there usable for future purposes. I believe that the rate at which that those benefits should be paid should be capped. Because it makes no sense to me that the sick leave that was accumulated 5 years ago or 10 years ago be paid off or be paid out, compensated either as a payout or a payment to cover benefits, health benefits. It just makes no sense that be based. So I think that's we have to draw the line. We have to draw the line for each and every one of the employees at a certain rate, and that's really dependent upon their rate and what's fair. Is it fair to cap it at their 2013 rate? They're getting the benefit of many years of wage increases for their payouts.
You could cap it at the average rate, because right now it's taken at the final rate.
It is.
You could cap it at the average rate, and then half of the hours would have been accumulated at the lower rate, and half of the.
Well, I suspect it would be too hard of a calculation to go back over the years, and whatever the sick hour was, in whatever year it was accrued, that's the rate that you get paid out.
I don't know. It seems easy from up here, but we're not swimming in the spreadsheets.
I don't know how easy that would be to do, because we don't even, our sick leave isn't calculated in the computer in our payroll system. It's kind of separate. So
but you could calculate very easily an average. you can find out when the person started and what their rate was and when they ended and what their rate was and take the median of that.
Oh, yeah, I see.
And that would be the rate.
And then not look at each.
And just assume that some of those, that the hours were evenly distributed and half of them would have been below that rate and half of them would have been above that rate.
Well, another way you could do it is cap it at what their rate is right now so that if it's paid out in 10 years, it's not at the rate they were then. Or it is at the rate they
Okay,
yeah,
but I think that's sort of what the
I understand on that concept, because if we don't, now is the time to address that. That's part of the formula in my mind.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit more detailed than what we're trying to do tonight. We're trying to get some principles, and then have Tracy and that task force come back with maybe four or five different alternatives with different.
Okay, but I like Penny's idea of the ability to gift or transfer as opposed to developing a pool to be drawn from.
I do too. So the rest of you haven't weighed in on that issue. Instead of having some sort of pool, but the pool has to be gifted from one employee to the next and not just
I'm an advocate of that.
Trustee Kopisch,
I like the idea. I've seen it utilized in a number of cases where, some extreme hardships in families with extended illnesses and a need for a caregiver. So, to be able to direct, I think, would be good.
Trustee Gamer?
I just had a question, and I think you answered it right in here.
Did you agree with that?
Oh, that one.
Gifting idea?
Yes.
Trustee Gass, do you like it?
Yeah.
All right. So if we could explore that possibility as one of the building blocks. Okay, Trustee Gamer.
This would just... this is all management input at this point, no staff input yet. Correct. But I'm assuming your input is based on some thought of where the employees are with this.
Yeah, I think that the staff members have talked to some of their staff and gotten some input from them when we were talking about it at our department.
Well, it's really hard to get input when you're at the 90,000-foot level and you really don't know. The devil's in the details. So I think when we get to the point where I think we've given Tracy and the task force some general principles and guidelines to follow, and I think you're going to be able to come up with some alternatives, and we can just sort of switch the blocks around in different and interesting ways.
Just one, Tracy, one question on accrual. I'm assuming that whatever we arrive at, on January 1, employee Joe gets X bank of PTO. I'm assuming that's actually accrued 1/12, per year.
Prorated, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I never like the situation where I get clients that come in
quitting on February 1st.
Yeah. Quit on February 1st and you take all your vacation and it's already been earned. It was earned on January 1st. I'm assuming that it's going to be accrued.
Yeah. The way we do it now is when someone does leave, we go back and they have. We give them all vacation January 1, but then when they leave, they get unearned vacation and earned vacation. So then that's calculated and seen if they've overused their vacation, they have to the village. If they've underused, then that's part of their payout. So we do calculate that out based on when they leave, and they will not get a payout of their full amount on January 2nd if they've used it all when they walk out the door. So we do calculate it based on their anniversary date.
Craig and Brad, you've been part of these discussions, I would imagine, kind of trying to represent the folks who work in your areas. Are we going down any paths that seem not in line with what you had envisioned or what you're hearing? Or what are you going to hear tomorrow when sort of these principles are shared with the staff?
I guess I'll speak on, say, a newer employee. You get that
gap.
You buy down for 30 days, but they don't have 30 days.
Right.
So is there a caveat that can be built in for some of these newer ones that they may be able to accumulate or carry over X amount and build up somewhat of a bank to meet that 30 days?
Yeah, it's an issue that we talked about at the beginning. I think that's important in this new system that we have to figure out a way that a new employee can bridge that gap, and whether it's a policy that they can just accumulate, roll over more than 15 until they get some momentum or they can bridge that gap, or I don't know what the solution is, but I agree that there has to be a way to treat people to not put so much risk on them. And granted, they could probably buy short-term disability out of their own pocket for the first couple of years. But
Well, they'll have to continue because the most they can carry over is 15. They can never accumulate. We have a lot of new employees, and they'll never be able to have more than 15 hours on the book.
For their... Right. Well, no, you'd have the 15 hours you earned plus the 15 that you carried over from the previous year.
According to this, first year gets 21 days. I mean, that's...
That's 21 plus 15. There's over 30 right there.
Yeah, for second year.
I mean, the second year, yeah. The second year, if they only take 6 days, they can carry over the 15, and then if they don't use any that second year, then they're... Or they only use 6 that second year.
It's allowing that new employee to build a little bit of that extended leave bank.
Right. Yeah.
Bridge that gap.
Right.
Maybe there's another bank. Some communities, what they did, you have the extended leave bank, which is really strictly for what people have now when they're sick leave, and that's kind of segregated and left out there. And then they have another bank, if you want to call it, that they can put some of this, the days that they want to roll into for another sick leave bank, they can do that. So some communities actually have 3 different banks, if you want to call it that. They have PTO, extended leave, and then they have this other bank you can put kind of to as well.
Yeah, I agree. There's some safeguard for the new folks, so that, I mean, I don't think it's a great way to welcome a new employee by saying, well, you're kind of at risk unless you buy down short-term disability on the 7 days. And we, I think we need to think of some policies or systems where it's easier for them to avoid too much of that risk.
Well, that might work. I mean, maximum carryover is 15 PTO days, you know, but for employees and, you know, certain early years, you can carry over more if you didn't use it in this year, but you have to stick it into some kind of sick leave bank. Does that make sense? That way they can build up.
And then cap that amount.
And then you cap it.
It gets you to that 30-day gap, you know.
I mean, you can carry over more, but the more has to be stuck into a designated account for sick leave purposes and not just more vacation.
So I heard at the beginning that, at least from my perspective, I heard from myself, that I'd like to have something incorporated in the system that would help the new employees bridge that gap. An alternative to that is to say, hey, you know, they can buy short-term disability on their own, and they've already bridged the gap because they can buy down to seven days. I'm leaning towards the former rather than the latter. I'd like to hear from the rest of the board. Do you want them to think about whatever system it might be, whether there's 3 different banks or something, and the difference in policy if you're here for, you know, your first 2 years, so that they can build up enough to bridge that gap? Yes or no? Trustee Kopisch, you want them to be thinking about that in the system, or should we just sort of avoid the complexity of it?
Keep it all on the table for now.
Trustee Cameron?
I think it's a good idea. And I think that I was just going to expand on that, saying, yeah, I don't think we want to drive a wedge between new employees and
right,
long-term
yeah.
employees
You're
and
right.
all that, right? So it's fine to that.
Yeah, and that in-between bank, that needs to be capped, too. That can't become
right.
unlimited.
Right. You like the idea, Trustee Dirk?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Trustee Gass?
Yes.
Trustee Zeller?
I'm not supporting another bank. As an alternative, what would you think of this? If 30 days is the magic number, and every employee, whether they're a first-year employee or a fifth-year employee, they're going to have some current PTO days in their current year, I think it would be easier for us to just to simply self-insure and to take that person to 30 days. From 30 days on, it's their responsibility to have bought down from 180 to 30. And if we simply bridge the gap, instead of creating another administrative pool of days, we would simply be willing to bridge the gap to 30 days. Then
what?
They're on their own.
For whom?
For all the employees.
All the employees.
For
okay.
all the employees.
I believe that first 30 days of short term is the most expensive part of the insurance.
No, I'm not saying that we buy insurance whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
I'd say have the employee buy down to 30, and then we self-insure for people that can't.
Offer them to buy down to 30.
Okay.
If they choose to buy to 90, we're not covering 30 to 90, but we would cover to 30 days. And I think that's going to be far cheaper if the instance occurred than buying annually short-term, any mm-hmm. kind of short-term policy, whether it be the employee paid for it or the village paid for it. I think if we simply cover that 30 days, up to that 30 days.
For all employees?
For all employees.
So why would employees not just use all, why would they even do this ELB at all?
Well, this isn't for a routine sickness. This is a disability. How many employees have we lost a short-term disability? I can't think of too many where this would have actually applied.
I mean, I kind of like your concept, Mark. But what about if somebody's got an ELB, you know, sitting there with lots of sick days?
Well, they have to use it. I mean, they have to use what they have.
I mean, I like your idea for the newer employees that have a hard time getting to the 30 days, that we can self-insure that. But only for a certain window of time.
Yeah.
The expectation mm-hmm. that you're going to start banking
yeah.
some of
your ELB. Yeah.
So let's
get you to 30 days.
That's let's right. say we approach it like Brad said, is just the first year employees. We self insure for the first year employees.
I think we need to sit and look at
that. Yeah, I think we might be getting too detailed, but I think what I'm hearing is you want them to work with something that will, there'll be some exception to help the new employees, the first or first 2 year employees, bridge that gap between the 30 days and what they might have accumulated with.
But I don't support another pool, another gathering or accumulating pool, a third.
I heard from other folks just explore the pot, you know, figure out some alternatives for taking care of that problem, whether it be, you know, a difference in policy or a third pool. The easier the better, though. I think I agree with
yes.
Trustee Zeller that the easier to understand it, the better.
You have the same issue with some of even our longer-term employees. Because we have some long-term employees that have been here for a long time and only got 30 hours of sick leave left. So they're kind of in the same boat, but it's kind of their choice of where they've been, or they've had issues that have required them or that have allowed them to drop to that amount of hours. So we kind of are in the same boat with other employees besides just the new employees that have not accumulated. We have a similar situation with some of our long-term employees. So then how do you want them to lack part of it too? So
at what point, what is our level of responsibility though? At what
well,
point?
That's
I mean,
question.
If they, you have some savings to bridge the gap from 30 days, you're assuming that the employees have no savings whatsoever to take them to their 30 days.
What do you mean by savings?
Personal savings.
Oh.
I mean, what Brad is saying is that they would miss a paycheck on a two-week cycle or two paychecks. That's what we're talking about here,
right.
is that difference between the 15 days that they have and day 30. From day 30 on, it's their responsibility.
I know what you're saying, Paul, but I'm just saying we have employees here that are in the same boat as potentially new employees because of the amount of sick leave that they have accumulated or that they have. So how do
or
we
have
it left?
Well, I mean, could you do this for the first... And again, I don't want to get into too much of the detail.
Right.
For the first 2 years of the program, we treat everyone the same, like Trustee Zeller was talking about with the self-insured. And so even people who are veteran employees who haven't built up a lot of sick leave for some, they can start thinking about that, just as if they were new employees walking through the door. You got to start to build up your ELB to bridge that gap. After the two-year time period, after we implement this, only the new employees then will have that, and the people who've been here for, you know, for a longer period of time are, you know, hopefully they've taken some strategies to build up that ELB.
Well, and to the extent that we self-insure, you know, some category of employees to cover that gap. I mean, we're almost going to have a policy in place that's going to look like a short-term disability policy and define what disability means and basically steal a short-term disability policy and say, that's it. I mean, we self-insure, and that's our policy, you know, in regard to that. But we're almost going to have kind of a policy.
For the first company. It might be more complicated than it's worth. I don't know.
We'll look into it. We'll see what we come up with then.
But the point's well taken. I mean, you want to treat people fairly, and some people haven't accumulated a lot of sick leave for a good reason. And so do you want to treat a new employee better than you treat someone who's been here for 30 years and doesn't have any sick leave built up to bridge that gap? All right, are there any other more kind of global issues that you need us to weigh in on before you start putting building blocks together? Brad, were there any other, and Craig, I didn't hear from you, are there any other issues that you think are going to be, you can get a lot of feedback on?
We've actually had, you know, through the personnel manual last year and into this year, quite a bit of discussion about all these different options.
Okay.
And, you know, my staff recognize that the sick leave policy will change, they're okay with that. They recognize the need and a balance that fits all parties. The short-term issue of how you handle, if the sick leave is a very small amount, well, what happens if you're sick a few days longer? How do you address that? So you've put a couple of options out here to explore whether the employee by a short-term disability or it's a combination of a longer-term disability self-insure. I mean, there's two or three options, and those are important to look at because that gap in there is of concern to them. And, you know, even a small bank where you can carry over some PTO, which is really just accumulated sick leave, to some number is another option. But that's an important point. The vacation policy that's in here, this recommendation, I think everyone is in favor of that because it simplifies it for everybody, puts everybody on the same schedule. That's why we proposed that before, and there was a lot of enthusiasm for that. I think this is a good starting point, and I think we need to just explore this and really look at the issues. And the short-term disability sick leave is probably the area where it needs the most investigation, because that's the area probably of the most concern at this point in time. And it sounds like there's some workable options that we can look at.
We talked to Clara a while ago about the budget, and a lot of this, in my mind, has no budget implications whatsoever, but that's because I'm assuming there is not going to be any payout of sick leave now when we implement this. It's still going to, in my mind, it's still at the time of retirement like it always has been. Is that the assumption of the rest of the board? I mean, one approach would be we start paying out that liability now so that it's not too big of a chunk, but we have already, right? I mean, we had quite a few retirements recently, so. But is that the assumption of all of you that sick leave is going to be set aside, we're going to treat it the same way that we always did, and the payoff is going to be, whatever that rate is going to be at the time of retirement and not any time earlier?
Well, then we budget a certain amount of money for that, and that can just decrease as we get through this.
Well, but going to the PTO system almost fixes that issue. I mean, because we're not going to run the sick leave system like we used to, where you can just bank it and get paid out on retirement. I mean, look at a PTO system with a maximum carryover, and if you terminate, you vested in, and accrued a certain amount, you get paid out upon termination.
But our very first discussion item was what's already been done is going to stay that way.
Right.
And including the time at which it's paid off. That just because we're going to a new PTO system doesn't mean we're going to pay people out what we owe them right when we go to the new system. It's still going to wait until they leave. Okay. That was my assumption. I'm looking around. It seems like that's the assumption of the board. Okay. Anything for Brad? Anything else?
No, I think, like Craig said, I think we've got a good piece of
work. Okay. We're trying to simplify and control the liability and make sure that people are adequately protected.
Can we revisit this 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's the plan, mm-hmm. right?
That'd be great. We'll work on it and come back with some more
right.
suggestions.
Even if you don't have them all ironed out, whatever you have,
yeah,
we'll just keep
some
we'll
back.
Just keep working
yep.
on it.
Thanks for your input.
I'm going to entertain a motion with regard to this item.
Move to table until the next meeting.
Okay. The motion is to postpone until the next meeting. Is there a second? Trustee Dart seconds. Discussion? Bless you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
Tracy.
That was
I'm
an
sorry. I was wondering if we could put it out maybe to the budget meeting that's on the 25th. That gave us a little more time. Is that right?
26.
26.
Let's bring it on the next agenda. Bring us what you have. Bring us what you have. Even if it's one alternative, it's a one.
Okay.
I think that was unanimous. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
New business, item number 15, action regarding resolution 2013-15, urban wildlife damage abatement and control grant. You want to hear from Brad before we vote?
Sure.
He's not the turkey guy, though.
That didn't work well.
This is the joint grant application that we're putting together with Ashwaubenon and Alway and DuPere for the aerial survey, so... One of the requirements of the grant.
I think a few of you were at that listening session. And
yeah.
mm-hmm. folks
okay, Bellevue is not participating.
I'm meeting with Bellevue on Monday, the administrator. And this is one of the items we're going to be talking about to see whether or not it's something that either Bellevue wants to expand the program that they already have in place because they do have areas that they can hunt.
Yeah.
So... They're a little bit different as far as our situation goes than the rest of us.
Any further questions for Mr. Lang? Is there a motion with regard to this item? Trustee Guest?
I'll move to adopt resolution 2013-15.
Trustee Green?
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 16, the consent agenda, will take items 16A through C unless there are objections. Is there a motion with regard to items 16A through C? Trustee Dart.
Move to approve and place on file.
Is there a second? Trustee Genrich? Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Item 17, discussion on high density zoning.
This was put on here as a request from the Hilltop discussion with the residents with the petition. And I just wanted to just revisit maybe some information just so you understand it a little better. Village Ordinance 1107 really does regulate high-density district, and I attached the ordinance for you. And it addresses those six areas that you see, from uses down to signs. Any development within a high-density district, a new development, would also have to go through the planned district development, or the PDD, which is the one, so much the one when we did the PDD across the street. So between, in my opinion, between the high-density district ordinance that we have and the PDD ordinance that we have, the board really has a lot of say in that development and what it will look like. There is, as you know, an extensive process that a PDD goes through. So I don't feel that there's a need for any changes in our high-density district ordinance right now, and our PDD is good and does work. We've done some changes over the past year, a couple years, some minor changes to it. But I just wanted to let you know that there was some concern that we should do some other things to our high density district to make it more difficult, or make it more, not more difficult, make more controls on it, I should say, for development. But in between the two, we are covered pretty well.
Any questions?
No, I mean, my concerns were satisfied. Tracy gave a good explanation, and I reviewed the high density ordinance. I think there was sufficient, you know, control for the village, and the PDD process in particular, that separate ordinance segment, does give us the flexibility and control.
All right. We took care of item 18. Is there a motion to convene in the closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 19.851F for considering personal histories or disciplinary data of specific persons, preliminary consideration of specific personnel problems, and the investigation of charges against specific persons, including village policies and procedures, which, if discussed in public, would be likely to have a substantial adverse effect upon the reputation of any person referred to in such histories or data, or involved in such problems or investigations, and Wisconsin Statute 19.851C, I'm required to read this, so bear with me. Considering employment, promotion, compensation, or performance evaluation data of any public employee over which the governmental body has jurisdiction or exercises responsibility. Would you like me to repeat that? Trustee Darth, is there a second? Trustee Genrich, seconds. Roll, please. Trustee Kopisch.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Van Noven is an aye. Trustee Darts.
Aye.
Trustee Gass.
Aye.
Trustee Zeller.
Aye.
We're in closed session.